Hello out there in Radio Land. This is Chuck Shaden with Recollections at 50. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear as we tune in to a few nostalgic moments from a half century of Those Were the Days programs. When I decided to retire from the Those Were the Days program in 2009, we were very fortunate to have Steve Darnall take over the role as host and producer. Steve had become editor and publisher of the Nostalgia Digest in 2005, and he had been contributing articles for the magazine since 1993. But we actually first met in 1978. Steve and I talked about that first meeting on a Those Were the Days broadcast in 2009. Now, when you were a youngster in graduating from elementary school, or was it middle school or
I was in eighth grade at Avery Coonley School in Downers Grove.
Uh-huh. And this was 1978.
This is spring of 78.
Spring of 78.
Yeah, I was, and I knew. Well, I was going. My sister, 3 years older than I was, she was at Lyons Township High School in LaGrange, where my family lived, and I was going to be a freshman that fall. And by that point, I had been listening to Those Were the Days, gosh, a little over a year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that the Lyons Township had a radio station, and I thought, well, God, Those Were the Days made radio sound so much fun, and I thought that would be great. I would love to be a part of that. And then I thought about it when I thought, well, Those Were the Days interviews people. So perhaps if I interview somebody, then all I have to do is walk in the door at WLTL and I'll have a show. This will be easy. It wasn't quite that easy.
Uh-huh.
Although I'm thrilled to say that thanks to the largesse of one of the faculty there, I did get a show playing old radio in the fall of 1978. And I always say I would call it a poor man's Those Were the Days, but that would insult the poor. But, you know, it was sort of the equivalent of you know, buying a Cubs shirt from a sporting goods store and pretending to run out on a Wrigley Field. You know, clearly you're not a member of the team, but sure.
So your strategy, though, was to provide them with an interview.
Well, I thought, you know, this way, then I can have a show like Those Were the Days where we say, well, we'll play some shows and our special guest will be person X. And I thought, well, who do I know to interview that I would really like to talk to? And the first person that came to mind was you. So and like I say, I called the studio some Saturday and you were very gracious and accommodating, and you had suggested if you ever come down to the Northwest Federal Films, you know, I'll meet you there and we can go talk. And I remember very well, it was April 1st, 1978, and they were showing City Lights, Chaplin film.
Oh,
I remember
that
very well because I missed the first 20 minutes of it.
To do this interview.
Which was fine. You know, but I remember very well, we met in the lobby, and then we went to your office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had an office at Northwest. I was on the staff. Yeah.
I remember being very impressed because I think there was a little Chaplin statue in the office, and I know there was a Jack Benny statue in the office, and I thought, oh, this must be the greatest job on earth. And like I say, for the fact that I was 13 going on 14, and I didn't really have a set market, so to speak, for this piece. It was a real pleasure, as I recall, and you were very gracious and generous with your time and answered every question that I'm sure was of life or death importance to a 13-year-old, probably less crucial now. But it was a real positive experience all the way around, and I certainly left thinking, boy, that's what a great job that must be. You know,
you're going to have a job like that pretty soon.
I know. Yeah. I'm thrilled.
Less than a month now, right?
I know.
Right here on this station. Well, listen, we've talked about this conversation that you and I had. And, of course, your voice hasn't changed at all since then, right? 13
to this. I was saying earlier, it is funny because you can look at pictures of yourself when you're 13 and you don't really think anything of it other than, oh, it's a 13-year-old kid. He's growing up. But when you hear your voice, it is kind of a different experience. It's a different person, quite figuratively and literally.
Well, here's you and a different person as Steve Darnall talking back on the 1st of April, no fooling, of 1978 with me.
For the last 8 years on radio, many people have been lucky enough to tune into the man who has been paving our Saturdays for us with the old radio entertainment. And on April 29th, 1978, he'll be celebrating his 8th anniversary on the air, and his name is Chuck Shaden. And I guess the first question I wanted to ask you is, how many shows do you have, roughly?
How many shows I have in my whole collection, Steve? I have something better than 40,000 old-time radio programs.
And you've been collecting since?
I've been collecting almost 12 years.
Which, 66, right?
Yeah, about that. Now, I started from scratch. I started with nothing. And I had discovered somebody who was selling some radio shows. And I was amazed that they were even around. I just thought that they weren't anyplace. And so I bought a couple of shows, and I turned some of my friends onto that. And they bought a few shows, and it didn't take us any time at all to realize that if he bought shows and I bought shows, we'd buy different shows, and then we'd make a copy, and each of us would be able to have more shows. It did take a second tape recorder, though. You have to have two tape recorders to do it.
And so it started. That's sort of a switch, Chuck Shaden buying radio shows from someone else.
Well, that's we all have to start somewhere.
Yes,
you know?
I remember I started out with a couple of little compact cassettes, which we get when you buy one of these.
Absolutely
free as a toss-in. Next question, how did you begin all this? You say earlier, but what made you collect all these shows?
Well, I grew up listening to the shows when they were really being broadcast, you know, when they weren't rebroadcast, they were being broadcast. And I enjoyed them, and I liked them. Television came along, and I started watching television, and I didn't pay much attention to radio. But after a while, I didn't realize it, that I had felt something was missing in my life, and I just thought, oh, I'd like to hear the radio shows again. What was missing, actually, was the use of my imagination. Because when you're with television, you don't get to use your imagination so much. So I went back to the radio, turned on the shows, and they were gone. In a short period of a few years, television had literally taken over, and there were just a couple of shows left on radio. And I felt disappointed because I was looking for those shows, and they were gone, and I thought, gee, I'm really missing something, because Mr. District Attorney on television was not the same as it was on radio.
No, it wasn't.
So I felt a loss. Well, then I was always looking around for these things, and I actually discovered in the early 60s something to take the place of radio, as far as I was concerned, of those radio shows and stories and comedies and dramas. And those were the comedy records that were being released with Shelley Berman and Bob Newhart and Bob and Ray and Stan Freberg and people like that. And I don't think that anybody realized it, but I think the reason those records were so successful is that the public also craved some audio entertainment, something they didn't have to watch to be entertained. So I was looking for those records, and then every once in a while, ran across somebody who had a collection of radio shows and on tape, and I bought from them. And then I realized that the shows were available, or they were there, so I started searching for them on my own. And it wasn't I stopped buying shows because I started discovering them. But it's not an easy thing. You have to haunt the radio stations and the producers directors and any place you can. Advertising agencies, sponsors, drive everybody nuts trying to get a hold of them. But if you persist, somewhere along the line you find them.
And I haunt you and Jack Cripe trying to get a hold of them.
Right.
Now,
it's a lot easier for you. All you got to do is turn on the radio and there they are. So.
Over the last 8 years, you've been talking with a lot of the people who made radio what it was, such as Alice Reinhart and Marvin Miller and Jack Benny, you know. Which celebrity, can you really say, did you prefer to interview the most?
Well, that's really difficult to say. Everybody that I've interviewed has brought to me another dimension of radio. They've all done something different, and I found an actor who was a supporting actor to be just as fascinating to me as someone who was the star of his show. I certainly must say that it was a tremendous experience meeting and talking with Jack Benny. I mean, I've always liked Jack Benny as an idol almost, and he was great, and I was very nervous. It's one of the first interviews that I did, too. But there were people like Marvin Miller, for example, who was fascinating. He was in town a few times and actually joined me on my radio show live, and we talked about his career. And Elliot Lewis, who was Frankie Remley on the Phil Harris and Ella show. That was a fun interview because he was enthusiastic about the radio days, and he was happy to talk to me.
Is Lewis still alive today?
Oh, yes, sure.
Yeah. I haven't heard anything from him for some years.
Well, I think he's writing today. Mm-hmm. I think he's working out at Paramount, and he's writing for television. And occasionally he appears in a small role in one of the comedy shows or something like that. So there's so many that I've interviewed, and I must have interviewed 100 of them already. And everyone is different, and they're all fun. And I can't say that I have a favorite or a fascinating one. Some give you the information you'd like to get more freely than others.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been lucky because I'm really interested in the radio days and in those people. I've tried to do my homework before I go into an interview, get as much information as I can about them so that it doesn't take them too long to find out that I'm really interested in them. Well, there's nothing more flattering to a person than to find out that someone is interested in them.
Mm-hmm.
When they find out that I'm not just a superficial type of an interviewer, I want to get where were they born and what are they doing now, they warm up to the subject. And many of them who started out before the tape started rolling said, well, I've got 10 minutes and that's it. I've gone 45 minutes with them because they warmed up to it. And Agnes Moorehead was an example of that. She was in town here and I had almost an exclusive interview with her, and she really didn't want to be bothered. She couldn't be bothered, and she was grumbling to the press agent who was, I don't want to time, oh, all right, I've been 5 minutes and you come in. I heard her say, you come back in 5 minutes and then I can break this up. Well, we started rolling with the interview, and I know we went 8 or 9 minutes, and the press agent came in to kind of break up the thing, not saying anything because the tape was rolling. And she raised her hand, and she gave him a signal, don't bother me, I want to keep talking. And she kept, I guess we did 20 minutes or 25 minutes about it. That's I'm very pleased about that, too.
Yeah, well, the magic flows once the mic goes on. Is there any particular show you really enjoy doing? You go to the studio and say, I'm anxious to do this show because there's so many great things on it.
Well, it may sound trite to say it, but I feel that way almost every mm-hmm. week. I personally enjoy the theme shows better than the a show with just variety. Although a variety show is very comfortable for me because I don't feel restricted to the theme. But I like a theme show because I enjoy preparing and planning a theme show. It's fun. It's like being Mr. Keen, Tracer of Lost Radio Shows, when I say, I'm going to do a theme on automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I try to do is build a variety of shows, each with a subject of automobiles in the mm-hmm. material. And you want comedy and mystery and drama. Hard to find a Western with automobiles in it. But, you know, you try to do that sort of thing. It's hard to say a special kind of a show. If I'm up for a show, really, really excited about something, it usually is a theme show or a special show. Now, as I think for a minute here, you say what I thought was the best show that I'd done in the last year, and I think I would say it was the tribute to Crosby. To Bing Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a show I put together in a very short period of time, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Only a week.
Yes. Right. And but I worked hard at getting it together. And I think if it was a good show, I think it was because I really liked Bing Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
And I had if you heard the show, you know I had some personal correspondence going on with Bing. And it was a very special show for me. Those special shows are the ones that are most important.
Mm-hmm. Of course, with an entertainer like Crosby, it's much easier to find a good day you can spend with Bing Crosby because there were so many great shows he did.
Yeah. Well, he was very versatile, and he did mm-hmm. a lot of other things.
Whereas, like you say, a theme with automobiles. Now, the listener would think there is nothing, you know, an automobile show would be a great find, but there were really more than we would think. Worth it.
Oh, well, mystery shows. Mm-hmm. Suspense would have a show about a couple being hijacked in their automobile, you know. Lights Out could have a program where a woman's body is being stuffed into a trunk. Fibber McGee and Molly could be in an automobile. Lum and Abner, any of the comedy shows. Armis Brooks could have Walter Denton's car busting up, you know. Archie Andrews could be trying to get a car for the weekend or whatever, you know. So it's not as difficult, but it's fun. And when I'm looking for a show, looking for the material to put a show together like that, it's when you're down to the last one, you need one more 30-minute show, you know, and you're going frantic because you get on a deadline then. And it's fun when you get it. Eureka, I have found it. You know.
We had the same problem. I'll tell you about that later when we shut off the machine. What radio peoples have you not been able to talk with that you would really like to talk with or like to have talked with?
I always say I'm still trying to make arrangements. Bob Hope is one that I'd like to talk to about his radio days. I'm not too interested at all in his television or his movie stuff, although I'm a fan of his as far as movies are concerned. But I'd like to talk radio with Bob Hope. I'd like to talk with Phil Harris and Alice Faye. I'd like to talk with, not because of his radio stuff so much, but because I think he's quite a guy, Ray Bolger. I'd like to talk with him. I guess that off the top of my head, that's about as many as I can think of.
As we turn the clock forward, about June of 1976, I think it was, you opened the Metro-Goldwen-Memory Shop.
Yeah,
now,
opened in
the early... What caused you to open that? I mean, you had competition with the Nostalgia Shop in Chicago. What made you open the shop?
Well, we often had people coming to us saying we were selling the cassettes by mail on the radio, you know. And we often had people saying, I'd like to, you know, where can I get, I'd like to pick them up. I'd like to pick up the cassettes. I know you have a list of tapes, but I'd like to pick them up. I don't want to wait. That's one part of it. We thought, well, it would be nice if there were a place where you could buy tapes and records and 8-tracks of the radio shows. And then we thought, gee, you know, it's a good idea to have books and magazines, too. And then my partner, Dave Denwood, in the shop, he had a large collection of all these movie posters and movie memorabilia and lobby cards and that. And Dave had always thought that he would like to, he's been collecting for many years and thought he'd like to go retire out to California at a very early age and open up a shop out there. But both of our business commitments are here in the Midwest, in Chicago, and we had been friends for 20 years and said, why don't we try it? Let's put together a shop and see if we can go with it. And we've just recently celebrated our second anniversary in the shop, and it's been very nice. It has not been, you know, the nostalgia answer to Marshall Field and Company, but it's been fun. It's been nice. We've been able to, we haven't lost any money with it. And we have been able to provide a place where people can come and find things that they maybe couldn't get someplace else or would have to search all over to get this kind of selection that we offer them.
Can you, I don't know if you can remember or not, can you remember the first show you ever collected?
The first show, no, I think I started off with about 6 or 10 programs, and in that bunch was The War of the Worlds, and which we'll be playing again on, I think, the first Saturday in May for National Radio Month.
Mm-hmm.
But The War of the Worlds, and I got a Grand Central Station, a Jack Benny program, a Fred Allen show, an Inner Sanctum, Suspense. Some of those shows were in the first batch that I wanted. First Nighter, I think, too.
Right. And let's see, a few years ago, sometime before you opened Metro-Goldwyn-Memories, you began showing the old movies.
Right. We've been showing the old movies at Northwest Federal for almost 6 years now. On Saturday nights.
You remember the first movie you ever showed?
Yeah, I think it was Broadway Melody.
Now, you've been on the air for nearly 8 years as of this interview, and you've got the Metro-Goldwyn-Memory Shop, and you've got the Memory Movies, and you've got numerous other things. Do you ever think you're going to stop with all of it, or any
of it? No, I don't think so. I don't have any reason to.
What? I mean, do you ever think you'd stop going on the air and presenting radio?
The only thing that would probably keep me from going, continuing on the radio, would be a lack of interest on the part of either listeners or sponsors or a radio station. In other words, if a station said, I don't want you anymore, and I couldn't find another station, then I'd have to go off, right?
Mm-hmm.
If sponsors were saying, no, we're not interested in paying the bill for this, then I'd have to go off. Or if listeners said, by turning their mm-hmm. dial, that they weren't interested anymore, then I'd have to go off, too. I don't see that happening in any one of those three examples at this point. My immediate goal, and it's just a short, I don't really have long-term goals, Steve. Mm-hmm. I try to do the best I can today, and I think tomorrow will reward me and it's mm-hmm. By itself. I really would like to I'd like to see my 10th anniversary on radio. I'll do everything I can to see that. And that, I'm only saying that because you bring it up. No flag waving in the distance that says you may go off the air. No, I love it. I like it all. I enjoy the Saturday broadcast immensely.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the high spot of my week. I really love it.
Well, I hope that maybe you celebrate your 10th and then your 20th and then your 30th anniversary, and we hope if you ever are forced off the air, it'll be sometime after the next 250 years.
Well, that's fair enough.
Well, I want to thank you, Charles L. Shaden, Vice President of Northwest Federal and astute nostalgia collector, for spending a little time with us here.
Thank you very much, Steve.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. See, my voice has changed a little bit since then, hasn't it? And so has yours, Steve.
But a little bit.
When did you, do you remember after that? You know, no one knows when their voice changes, do they?
No. I mean, I do know that I went on the air in the fall at WLTL, yeah. So I'm going to assume it was changing at that point. But no, probably not really changing for another 12 or 18 months.
No, Lyons Township.
Lyons Township High School.
LTL. Why LTL?
I don't know what the second L was for, to be honest. Mm. I think we came up with various, you know, Lyons Township lunatics Township losers.
Well, you know, as we listen to the conversation here, you conducted a very good interview. You were well prepared. You had notes. I don't remember that, but I could tell listening to this now that, mm-hmm. that you had notes. And I was very happy to talk with you. You know, people gave me a shot at it to talk to them, ask questions. And I used to go as a kid before I was even out of high school. I'd be visiting radio stations and asking for script copies and commercials and to talk to the personalities just to say hello because I heard them on the radio and all that sort of thing. So I always thought they were all very nice. I mean, no worries to get the heck out of here, kid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always thought that's a payback. It's like a paying forward, pay it forward, doing that sort of thing. This was on the 1st of April in 1978.
That's right.
And now I've said you were just in elementary school. I suppose you might be considered a little kid, but you weren't real little, were you? How tall were you? You're a tall guy anyway.
Yeah. I do know mm-hmm. I got my first FCC license in the fall of 78. I was 14,
mm-hmm.
and my mother still has it, and it reads that I'm 6'1½".
Wow.
So barring any growth spurt in the summer of 78, mm-hmm. yeah, I was probably up there. Probably 5'10", 5'11".
You had to be among the tallest kids in your class.
I was
huh?
always back row of the class picture, always.
Oh. Well, that's a good way. Oh, but not in the first row in front of the teacher, though, in the classroom?
No.
So now how tall are you? Now?
I'm 6'5".
6'5", yeah. Okay. And you come to the broadcast without a basketball. It's amazing.
I prefer to, it's possible I'm 6'6", but I prefer to limit myself to 6'5", because I think it's more dignified.
Okay, well, that's good. Well, you are very dignified. You did a nice job with the conversation.
Thank you very much. You
and
know,
as I listened to it, some of the things that I responded to your questions have certainly come to pass. And at that time, in 1978, I thought, boy, if I could make 10 years doing this. I mean, when I started in 1970, I thought, gosh, if I can make a year,
mm-hmm.
if I can do a year of this, that's great. And here I was, you know, coming up on 8 years. And then when you raised the question, I thought it really would be nice. I would like to round things off very nicely.
Sure.
So if I did 10 years and then you said 20 years or 30 years,
30 years
or something
yes.
like that, go on forever. And I said, well, I thought I would probably try to go on as long as I could. And now, it's ironic, but you have actually kind of made it possible for me to end my career.
Wow. I'm not sure that's how I want to be known.
This was a decision that I made before we really started talking about this. And I'm so glad that you're going to take over in our spot here on the 4th of July.
Thank you. And I have to say, from the time I've known you onward, that you've been nothing less than an absolute gentleman and very gracious to me and to my family, both the one I grew up with in LaGrange and the one I'm living with now in Chicago. And as a professional and as a human being, I've learned an awful lot from you, and I'm very grateful for that.
Thank you, Steve. That was from the Those Were the Days broadcast of June 13, 2009, just 2 weeks before I retired from the program. Steve Darnall, who interviewed me on April Fool's Day in 1978, assumed the role of host and producer of the show on the 4th of July in 2009. Holidays have always been important to both of us. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Recollections at 50. There's more to come in the weeks to come. This is Chuck Shaden. Thanks for listening.